Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm David Cartledge.
And I'm Lars Iversen.
On this edition, neither Real Madrid or Liverpool, nor even Bayern Munich, will the most sought-after coach in football regret turning down European footy's big guns to stay at Bayer Leverkusen. Also, the question is, what's gone wrong at Juve? Is the Bologna coach the answer? And we're talking Copa del Rey ahead of this weekend's big Spanish Cup final. What will Athletic Bilbao have to do to break their curse of the runner-up, or are Mallorca the favourites? Wow, what a week it's been in terms of the question that everybody's been waiting for, and the answer coming from Xavi Alonso this week was quite a surprise, wouldn't you say, David?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, don't get me wrong, there had been some murmurs that he was planning on staying, that he didn't see it as job done there. There was a lot more to do. But ultimately, I think, you know, you look at the current climate and everything's rushed in football. Everybody seems to, you know, not stay somewhere very long, especially if they're at a smaller club, with all respect to Bayer Leverkusen. And then when jobs, such as the Liverpool one, at Bayern Munich, absolute giants, they become available. He has made a decision where I call against the grain. I think it's quite a courageous one as well for him to do that, to remain with Bayer Leverkusen. There's still clearly work there to be done this season. And obviously he sees next season as another window of opportunity, perhaps to, you know, really cement their status as the top club in Germany. Bayern are clearly on a bit of a downturn. And there's also Europe to think about as well, Champions League, what they'll be in. And, you know, maybe Alonso looks at that and saying, can we be the next team to, you know, upset the elite, as it were? Atleti squeezed in when Diego Simeone first came to Atleti, of course. They squeezed in. They became amongst those giants. And maybe Alonso sees that as well. So I think he's made a good decision. It's the right decision, I think.
Do you agree with that, Lars? He's turned down some big, big names, big clubs, to stay at Bayern Leverkusen. And he obviously, arguably, at least the most sought-after coach in Europe, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Bayern Munich. He's turned them all down to stay at Bayer Leverkusen. Was that the right decision?
Well, I'm a bit disappointed in Cartledge, because I was hoping he would go all in and, like, slam him, because we need a bit of, like, we want dynamism in the studio, right? We don't want people just agreeing with each other all the time. But I can't bring myself to go full Keezy here. and say he's bottled it. He's bottled it to stay at Bayer Leverkusen or whatever nonsense he said down there in Doha. No, I think it seems very sensible. And if you again listen to what he said, he made the point very astutely, I thought, is that it's really his first full season as a manager. Like, he's not, you forget that he hasn't been doing this for very long. He was sort of parachuted in the, was it October in 2022, he took over when Leverkusen were kind of really foundering, and he's gradually built them up into the team he is today. But this is his first full season, and I think there's a factor here which Xabi Alonso will know better than anyone, because Xabi Alonso as a player played for, you know, some of the biggest teams in the world. Obviously, he played for Liverpool, played for Real Madrid, played for Bayern Munich. He will know and appreciate better than maybe anyone else the difference between working at those clubs and working at a club like Leverkusen. Because Leverkusen are, they're super professionally run, they're always, you know, reasonably well funded, but they are kind of a small club in a lot of ways. They're not a club that a lot of people care about. It's not like the 24/7 media pressure at Leverkusen is very different from what it is at Real Madrid. It's just not the same thing. It's not completely managing in a lab, in a petri dish. It's not quite that way, but it's a much more comfortable gig in terms of being left alone to do the work. And this is something I think Xabi Alonso will be very aware of. So it's kind of a great place for someone like him, who's clearly a huge, huge coaching talent, who clearly has a huge future in the game, to cut his teeth and work on stuff. And the idea that he's keen on taking this team that he's put together at least one more year and see what they can do together, I think that seems eminently sensible. And it's refreshing to see people think like this. And there's a school of thought in football that once a bigger gig and more money is available, you have to take it right away, no matter what. And I think for some managers, okay, maybe that can be true. Maybe you have to make hay where the sun is shining. But the thing about Xabi Alonso is, no matter what happens next season, he's still going to be Xabi Alonso, right? So, I mean, since Leverkusen are now going to win the Bundesliga, they may win the double, right? So he's done an incredible thing with them. If they have a terrible next season, he's still going to be attractive to just everyone because he's Xabi Alonso and he's already proven that he can do this stuff. So there's less to lose for him than if he was like some random Estonian man no one had ever heard of. Okay, maybe you jump because if it goes wrong, maybe you don't have that kind of cachet. But Xabi Alonso is going to wake up next season and still be Xabi Alonso. And that, I think, probably gives him a little bit of security.
Yeah, you say that, but David, has he not missed a golden opportunity? You don't know what the decisions that Liverpool, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich are going to make as a result of this. Whoever they bring in might be, you know, a long-term stay. So has he missed the opportunity, or three golden opportunities, arguably?
Honestly, it could go either way. I mean, if you look at Bayern's recent history and how they've been with coaches, who's to say the next coach to come in will be an absolute massive success and a mainstay? Liverpool as well is a really tough gig to follow Jurgen Klopp. So the expectations are going to be extremely high straight away for whoever comes into that job. And as for Real Madrid, look, that's the job that it might actually work out really well for, in terms of Ancelotti continue progressing a very, very young squad there at Real Madrid. And then he might be ready to step away, take that Brazil job. And then it might work out really, really well for Xabi Alonso. And so in a couple of summers' time, we could see him go to Real Madrid and just everything go according to a plan that he's clearly got in his head, I think, of how he views his career goal. And I just really admire him for, like as I said, not just jumping straight away at the first opportunity. We've seen a lot of very good young managers get swallowed up straight away. Let's say Graham Potter performed unbelievably well at Brighton, obviously stock extremely high. I think he potentially viewed Chelsea as a train that doesn't pass again. He jumped on that train, he did that, and this guy's still recovering from it now. He's still out of work. He's still looking for his next job.
And I think David touches on a really interesting point here, which is we see, oh my God, you could take over at Liverpool, you could take over at Bayern. Well, there's some challenging circumstances. I mean, taking over clubs like that is always going to be challenging, but at Liverpool, you have to be the guy who follows the guy, which is never an easy thing. I mean, there's no shortage of examples from recent history of that going tremendously wrong. And Bayern is also in kind of a weird spot as a club. This isn't, I mean, we might move on to a bit of Bayern chat soon, but there's a real sense that there's some chickens that are kind of gradually coming home to roost at Bayern. Bayern is this season they're having now hasn't come out of nowhere. It's been on a suboptimal trajectory for a while, and there is a bit of a sea change. Like Thomas Müller is 34. Like, does he have a future there? And what happens when you get rid of a personality like that? You know, Manuel Neuer, still a huge character in that dressing room, is 38. Is he going to be around forever? Kimmich, his contract expires next summer, has kind of not been that good this year. What's his situation? So we have the whole Davis situation as well. Alfonso Davis, who's supposedly already agreed a move to Real Madrid. It's just a question of whether it happens this summer, next summer. So there's a lot of instability there, and there is the last couple of Bayern Munich managers have all wanted different players and all been kind of told by upstairs that no, you can't have him. Like, we're going to do something else. So there needs to be probably a bit of a rebuild at that club, and that's not going to be an easy thing to do. Do you want to put yourself straight in the middle of that when, again, you're someone who've only been a manager for one season in, at a high level in your career? I'm not sure that is the sort of easy gig people make it out to be. So again, this could be a less crazy decision by Xavi Alonso as some initially than some initially made it out to be.
Okay, Lars has introduced the Bayern Munich question, and to a certain extent, we can't avoid the comparison, I suppose, with Leverkusen, because it's a tale of two coaches, isn't it? On the one hand, Xabi Alonso on his first full season as a coach, doing so well. And in fact, the Bayern Munich coach, Thomas Tuchel, has already conceded the title to Leverkusen. I think he had a little bit of a hump when he conceded it. It didn't sound like he was altogether generous, but he said, look, they're 13 points ahead. I haven't got any hope of winning it. We haven't got any hope. Give it to them. Yeah, whatever. But where does he go and what's happened to him? Why was this season so great for Xabi Alonso, but so devastatingly poor for Thomas Tuchel?
Well, I think he's always got the hump. Thomas Tuchel perennially has the hump. And I think it's why you've got one man in Xabi Alonso stock rising through the roof. I think Tuchel's could not be any lower right now. It's been a disaster of a season. I don't think everything is on him. I think a lot of it is on him. I think there's clearly, as Lars has touched on in the previous segment there, quite a lot of change going on at Bayern. Structure upstairs and what have you. They're kind of trying to re-identify themselves and what Bayern means and what Bayern are, because they've certainly not looked anywhere near it in the past few years, especially with just the way where they've operated, changing coaches and what have you like that. It's not really the sort of mentality that you associate with Bayern of previous years.
Would you say, David, that Thomas Tuchel is much like a camel in the context of... he is a camel in the sense that the hump is always there. The hump cannot be removed. If you remove the hump, surely he would not function in any sort of capacity. The hump is crucial to his character.
I think so.
One hump or two?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it probably motivates him. It's probably part of him and how he is in his coaching style. And look, he's probably not going to change now, even if particular clubs rule him out. I read this week that Barcelona were apparently ruling him out, and that was purely down to his temperament, his character. Now, Barcelona's just wanting a yes man. Tuchel isn't that. He couldn't be further removed from a yes man. So I think in Tuchel's case, it has. It's been a mess this season, especially if you look at the splash that Bayern made to sign Harry Kane. Now, Harry Kane's been a huge success. He's been brilliant. I think he's been let down by those around him, and Tuchel is one of them. And I think it puts him in a situation as well. And I was looking, and we were planning this show, where does Tuchel honestly go next?
From here, yeah, it's a good question.
Where does he go from here? Because for Barcelona, rule him out because of character. There's Barcelona, there's one of your big jobs available. No. I don't think Liverpool's going to appoint him. I think they're going to go for a younger coach, younger up-and-coming coach as well. Man United, again, can't really see him there either. I can't imagine being on the shortlist. He's probably not even on the shortlist at all there. So these are the big jobs that are available. I don't think he's going to be in the running for any of them. So he's going to be in an interesting position come the summer.
Yeah, it's a really good point that David points out there, Lars. Really good point that David makes. What happens to Thomas Tuchel? The one thing that we've said on OTC repeatedly over the years is that there's a poor or a controversial departure in him wherever he goes, whether he's at PSG, he's at Chelsea. It's going to end badly. It might start well, but it's going to end badly. We're not the only ones who would have identified that. If Barcelona is saying, look, we don't want Thomas Tuchel, part of their reasoning would be, we know it's going to end badly. And where does a top coach like him go to if he's got that reputation?
Yeah, it's a funny one with Tuchel, because if we go back to sort of when, maybe not when he made his name at Mainz, there wasn't a huge breakdown there, I don't think. He just kind of moved on because it made sense for him to move on. But at Dortmund, Tuchel's Dortmund were incredible and really should have won the league. And if they were up against anything other than Guardiola's Bayern, they would have won the league. I think they've one of the highest points totals to not win the Bundesliga in modern history. But he left, when he left Dortmund, the words that were coming out of the club, and I can't remember the exact quotes, I'm paraphrasing heavily, but it was that he's a great coach, but not a great person, basically, was what people were saying. And he certainly, whether he struggled to manage the players, the man management, he certainly struggled to manage upwards, which is very important at the highest end of football to deal with the people in charge of the club. So you have a guy who's kind of really, over the years, anyone who's worked with him seems to agree that on the training ground, as a tactician, in a coaching capacity, he's definitely world class. But he struggles to manage upwards. He struggles to manage the people within the organization. And he falls out with players occasionally and isn't amazing at managing huge egos. Which clubs should a man like that go to after Dortmund? Well, he's been at PSG, Chelsea, and Bayern Munich. And that just kind of seems like, what? This doesn't make any sense to me in terms of what his strengths and weaknesses are. You've just named three of the clubs on the planet where managing upwards, managing the leadership, and dealing with big egos is like the biggest part of the job, at least Abramovich-era Chelsea it was. I've just named three clubs where, you know, where Carlo Ancelotti was quite successful, albeit briefly in the case of Bayern Munich. Whereas, of course, Tuchel is kind of the anti-Ancelotti. In terms of where he fits in, I think it would make sense for him actually to take a step maybe down on the ladder, if I may be so crass, and look at clubs where he will have talented and willing players, where there's maybe less of an emphasis on having to deal with big egos in the boardrooms and a lot of sort of people around the club and stakeholders who have strong opinions, and maybe look at somewhere like RB Leipzig or one of these clubs where you will have, actually, paradoxically, if Xavi Alonso was to leave Leverkusen, that might be an interesting landing spot for Tuchel. One of these clubs where there's less, not so much pressure, but less emphasis on dealing with massive egos, and where he can just kind of be left alone to coach and do the thing that kind of everyone agrees that he's good at.
I tell you what bothered me about his conceding of the title to Leverkusen, he was talking about Leverkusen's match last weekend where they were 1-0 down against Hoffenheim and they come back and win 2-1. And he says, his quote is, that Leverkusen win certainly didn't help us. What do you expect? You know, what does a guy expect? That Leverkusen would be doing Bayern Munich a favour? Come on now. Why do you make these stupid statements?
It's an odd mentality.
Isn't it?
But yeah. Like I say, I think he's a bit of an odd guy. I think he actually is a good coach. And you know what I mean? That's we talk a lot about his character and his actions. And unfortunately, that is down to him. You know, he does perform those actions. He does say those things. And it does, you know, kind of cover up what a good coach he actually is. That's fact. He's shown before, like Lars has said, at Dortmund as well. There was a spell at Chelsea as well. I thought they were fantastic. So, you know, there is still some stock there. Absolutely. It's just a case of finding that next job, you know, that is, you know, the right, you know, environment for him.
We're going to be talking about coaches a lot on this edition of OTC. So strap yourselves in tightly as we go to Serie A to talk. Well, again, it's a story of two coaches, Lars. On the one hand, we've got Max Allegri, who was brought into Juventus being a sort of like a stabiliser on a rocky ship. And, well, Juventus ain't where they're supposed to be at the moment, whereas you look at Bologna and they've got a young coach in Motta who seems to be doing really well and, in fact, might be the next coach of Juventus if he plays his cards right. First of all, what's gone wrong at Juventus from your perspective, Lars?
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about these two guys, because these are two coaches who I think it's fair to say are, as a neutral, are on different ends of the excitementometer. The excitementometer? Yeah, definitely. I mean, really, Max Allegri, God bless him, has obviously achieved much in his career, and we shouldn't take that away from him. And I guess it's worth saying, with this Juventus season, you know, from, I looked at, I just double checked the numbers here, because I remember they went on this incredible run in late autumn and winter. From the 7th of October to the 21st of January, they won 14 games and drawn twice, and no defeats in that period. And it looked as if, implausibly, Allegri had made this team work. They were taking along very nicely. And after a while, they weren't even quite as bad to watch as Allegri teams tend to be. But then they went on this terrible run of just one win in nine. There was that week when they had a last minute... I mean, there was that one week back in February, January-February, when they had a draw with Empoli, and then the next week they lost to Inter. And that kind of took them out of the title race a little bit. And some suggestions in Italy that kind of may have sapped their motivation a little bit, because, you know, if you're not going to go for the title, fourth place looked pretty secure. He technically hasn't failed yet, Allegri. They may still make the Champions League. It's still the most likely outcome here that they'll make the Champions League, and that will have been the ambition for Juventus ahead of the season. But he's under a lot of pressure because they've only won once in the last nine. And there's also a wider point here, which is he the right guy to rebuild Juventus? Because this is a very different job than it was back when he was successful at club. And David Cartlidge is shaking his head vigorously, which makes me feel like we need to bring him in here. David.
Yeah, he is absolutely the wrong man to lead them forward. It was the wrong decision to bring him back a few years ago as well. I think Juventus weren't all together at the top of the club. They went for what they believed to be the safe option by bringing Allegri in. What they knew, basically, is somebody they knew that was okay. They were like, okay, we'll bring him back in. Because, quite frankly, they hadn't planned, or neither, they weren't ambitious enough as well to bring in a young coach at the time who could inspire them. You've got to remember, at the same time that they brought Allegri back, De Zerbi was performing excellently. So that's the decision what you have. And they decided to go down the Allegri road. Now they are stuck with him now. They are suffering for it as a result of that. And you can just take it on the chin. You made that decision. You allowed this. You didn't move forward. And that's why you're stuck with this now. And they've got another decision to make this summer. And they have to make this decision this time this summer. And that is to remove Allegri. Because there's nothing happening there. They aren't going forward. They're not even going to the sides. They're going backwards under him. He is their football is absolutely horrendous to watch.
I would argue, like, his football has always been terrible to watch, though, is the point here. Like, he's never been an exciting coach. But if you look back at what he's done well in his career, like, won the Scudetto in 2011, it was, with Milan. That was a team that had, like, peak Ibrahimovic. He had Clarence Seedorf was still there. Nesta and Thiago Silva in defense. Ambrosini was still around. Mark Van Bommel was in the squad. Like, you had a lot of these very experienced, big personalities on the field. And coaching that team, I suspect, was more about, like, again, the opposite to Tuchel, like the ego management and getting the best out of those guys. And again, when he went to Juventus, won five consecutive titles with them, that team was a winning machine already, you know. And so what he's done well is being at clubs where he has the best players in the league and just kind of making sure that they don't kill each other and that they're vaguely in the right positions and sort of go out and win the title. Now, I say that as if it's an easy thing. It's kind of not an easy thing. There's plenty of examples of coaches who have not been able to do that. You need a certain gravitas. You need a certain way of dealing with these stars. And that's something that he's shown that he has. But the point is, that's not the position Juventus are in right now. Juventus have lost a lot of money. Their finances are all over the place. They no longer have, I mean, no one could say with a straight face that this is the strongest squad in Serie A. It just isn't. It's not even close to that. And they're clearly a team that needs to sort of redevelop and find the thing David was talking about Bayern, about them having an identity crisis and needing to find themselves. I think that is true fourfold with Juventus. I think, you know, Juventus have completely lost their way in terms of what they are as a football club. One of the things that's going right for them is that they have this academy that's now producing young players. It's been one of the upsides of the season is that you've had some young players come in and do well. But again, is Allegri the right guy to establish a sort of philosophy going forward and build a team that's greater than the sum of its parts and bring these young players? I don't see that. There's nothing in his career, as illustrious as it may have been, to suggest that that's something he's good at. And the football, as you say, is absolutely dreadful. And even if they manage to limp in and secure a Champions League spot, there's just no logic in continuing to try to build something with him in charge. I don't want to two-foot him to quite the same extent as David, because he has clearly won quite a few titles. But just, I think so much of football and these decisions is about getting the right guy for the right job in the right situation with the right players and the right project, to use a slightly terrible word. And I don't see how Allegri is that for Juventus at this point in time of their history.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've two-footed him. I'm going to stamp on him while he's on the ground as well. In by saying, yeah, he's... yeah, I think, don't get me wrong, I think there was a point when they were winning, again, the football was still bad, but it was functional, so people overlooked it. Now, he's still playing the exact same brand of football without the results as well. And like Lars has said about the money, what's coming into the club and what have you like that, it simply isn't there. I read this week that Inter have apparently made over 400 million worth of revenue since Inzaghi came in. That's a significant amount, especially in Italian football, where the amounts of money on offer aren't significant compared to the Premier League and what have you.
Well, why is that out of interest? What, how comes, where have they got that 400 million from?
Just from selling players and also from Champions League runs what they've had as well. And yeah, they've been at the, since Inzaghi's came in, they've become a mammoth club. And I'd go as far as to say Inter one of the best teams to watch anywhere in Europe, which is also a further kick on Juventus as well, while they're watching one of their biggest rivals of all time kick on, appear in Champions League finals, go far in the Champions League in general, have a mix of young players, experienced players. So Inter have done everything right. So you look on the point on it quite enviously as well. And like Lars said, and I think this is a key thing, there's a lot of very, very talented youngsters coming through. Take Moretti, for instance, who needs to be, you know, integrated better, who needs to be seen as the focal point of the club moving forward. And look, there's options out there as well. It's not like there's no coaches out there. We're going to talk about Thiago Motta. Farioli, pulling up trees in France as well. Fantastic coach. De Zerbi, for me, is absolutely itching for another job as well, in terms of a bigger job that's available. Yeah. So De Zerbi's there as well, and he would be the smart choice. But, so there's options there for them as well. It's not like they can go out and go, oh, we're going to have to stick by Max again. No, there are plenty of options. Just make a decision.
Yeah, yeah. De Zerbi, though, it looks like he might be staying in the Premier League, maybe going further than Brighton, no disrespect. Any more of that two-footed tackle and you're off, son.
The problem with getting booked early in OTC is that it's not just you can't two-foot people, you also like can't kick the ball away, you can't do any time wasting, you have to like sarcastically applaud the referee, that's not a thing anymore. Like, having that booking is a big problem for David. Let's see how he does with the second half of the show.
Well, VAR's switched on. Let's see how far he gets.
I think I'm the Mark Van Bommel of OTC. So.
In the days before VAR, though, crucially. Let's talk about Thiago Motta, though, because, again, it's a case of two coaches, isn't it? Juventus are in the third position in Serie A at the moment, 2 points ahead of Bologna. But it does feel like Bologna have had the much better season. That wasn't expected of them. They've got this young coach, Thiago Motta, now that everybody, I suppose, in Europe's got their eye on him in one way or another. Could he be the answer, if not Max Allegri, for Juventus?
I think it would be an outstanding appointment if somebody doesn't beat them to it.
Yeah.
If another smart club doesn't beat them to it, then they'll miss out on him. But absolutely. Focusing on what he's done at Bologna is absolutely extraordinary. They're not one of your standard big Italian clubs by history and what have you. But he's got them up there. They're sitting in Champions League positions. Would be, I think, the first time in 60 years for them as well to guarantee Europe, which is an astonishing achievement. And the way he's doing it, the way that they are playing, they are fantastic. Again, one of the most interesting sides. A lot of Bayer Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso are rightly getting a lot of credit for what they're doing and how they're performing.
It's a good comparison, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But look, in Serie A, they've got their own eye-catching team, and that's Bologna, and they have. They've been brilliant. I think the way he sets them up, the way they play, I see a lot. If I'm going to use a comparison here, I think, you know, a lot of people who haven't seen enough of a coach, they'll always want a comparison. I think very Arteta-like in the way that they play. Very aggressive on the press. The movements that they make as well, in terms of how they shift over one side of the pitch and come back. Always looking for the switch. Very, very interesting the way they're set up there. And yeah, from a tactical point of view, fascinating coach, I think. And funnily enough, he's got a thesis out where he did when he was coming up through the ranks as a coach as well. So I'd recommend people look up his thesis on football. It's very, very interesting.
And what's his philosophy in terms of football? You said aggressive mm-hmm. play. Does he have a sort of a tactical philosophy beyond that?
Just focus on the ball. Just you know, I think a lot of the time, you know, you look at shape when you're away from the ball and what have you like that when you're behind it. But he makes a lot of, you know, he focuses primarily on having the ball, what you're going to do with it when you get there, how you're going to regain possession for one, but also what you're going to do with it when you do get it again as well. And I think that's really interesting from, and again, this is in his thesis where he's wrote, and he said quite a bit on this as well in terms of how he wants his teams to set up. And yes, there is a lot of similarities there, I think, with Arteta in terms of regaining the ball high up and aggressively so, and then making just quick, decisive movements with it when you do get it as well. So I think I found that's interesting by him.
Has Motta impressed you, Lars?
Yeah, so what I like about him in particular is that he has gone this kind of route. He has cut his teeth as well, keeping Spezia up for two seasons. And there he obviously had to set the team up quite differently, had to defend in quite a sort of compact manner, because you have a squad that's clearly not optimized to do what you would like to do. And I think that's... I think that's always a positive sign as a coach. If you can do reasonably well under trying circumstances like that, and then you earn the chance at a sort of mid-table club like Bologna, and then you're able to gradually implement and show people what you would like your team to look like there, that kind of shows that you've handled different types of situations. If we're talking specifically about Juventus, because he's been linked with Juventus a lot, one thing that kind of stands out for me is that if you look at the players who've been really important for them this season, Joshua Zirkzee, the striker, Alexis Salamakers, who's the winger who's on loan from Milan, Riccardo Calafiori, the defender. These are three fairly young players who have all been at bigger clubs and not quite made it there. I mean, Zirkzee was at Bayern and was considered a big talent. Calafiori was at Roma when he was younger, didn't quite break through there. Salamakers has been a kind of a bit part player at Milan. So he's taken young players who clearly have promise but weren't quite at the level at a bigger club, and he's kind of developed them, and that all of those three have looked for Bologna this season like they belong at a higher level. You also have a guy like Orsolini, who's 27, so he's not like a young player, but has been getting gradually better under Motta. So he has been improving players. Yeah, of course. So he's been improving players and playing a very attractive style of football, has a team punching well above their weight, has shown that he's not like he's done good work at a difficult circumstances at a much smaller club as well. For me, that's kind of ticking a lot of boxes in terms of him being a promising coach. And if we agree that one of the things Juventus should maybe focus on moving forward, since they're not in a position to just throw cash and outspend everyone anymore, they should focus on this very impressive academy setup they've got. Having a guy who's proven he can take promising young players and lift them must be very attractive to them.
He didn't mention, of all the things, Lars did not mention Lewis Ferguson, who's one of our own.
I did not, so apologies to all Scottish listeners. Exactly. Obviously, Lewis Ferguson is
who's
very
now
good.
The captain of Bologna. And it's a good comparative study between Motta and Allegri, though, because Bologna, they've won all except one of their last nine games as well.
Yeah, and I think it's down to Motta's innovation. He does some very interesting things. You've got to look what he does with the centre-back as well. I remember there was a lot of discourse about when Pep Guardiola used John Stones in that sort of that hybrid defender, midfielder sort of role that he was taking up. And now Motta uses something very similar. He likes his centre-back to come up in the midfield, and therefore he pushes the central midfielder further up the field as well, giving them an advantage in the final third. So he does little things like that, these innovations that are a little bit outside of the box, shall we say, that make him really, really interesting, and also make him really interesting for these clubs who do feel that they need to progress.
I suspect that John Stones is the first on the team sheet for Manchester City. If not Rodrigo, I mean, it's not that Norwegian, is it, Lars?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I thought not.
I refuse to engage in this kind of thing. Well, I'm not on a yellow card, so I can time waste now. I can kick the ball into the stands. Or possibly make fun of the referee or something. I don't know. I'm not on a booking, unlike Cartledge, so I can kind of go whichever way I want with this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's move on to the big game in the Spanish league now, or at least in Spanish football, is Copa del Rey, isn't it? The final coming up this weekend between Athletic Bilbao versus Mallorca. It's quite a season that Athletic Bilbao have had, David, and it will just get better and better, won't it? If they win this Copa del Rey, then they would have had an amazing season. They have won the Copa del Rey, but not for a long time.
They're runners up constantly. they're very much the bridesmaids, as you'd say. Yeah, it's been brilliant again to watch Athletic this season. I think Ernesto Valverde, if we're sticking on the coach's theme of this podcast so far, just incredibly underrated, understated. Everywhere he's gone, he's done a good job. He's either done a good job or a very, very good job. And a lot of the time, he doesn't get appreciation for it.
Why not?
Because he's just a very unassuming character. He hasn't got the tools about him, you know? He isn't going to fly off the handle. He isn't going to say anything wild. He's not going to do anything. He doesn't moan on about referees. He doesn't crave the spotlight. Very much focused on his players, unity, teamwork. He's worked with a lot of young players there, Athletic Bilbao as well. And you know, that they're rotating throughout the squad. I think he's got one of the most exciting youngsters anywhere right now in young Nico Williams. Incredible player to watch. He's playing alongside his big brother, of course, which makes it even better. And it just plays into that family environment that Athletic have as a club and always have had as well. Obviously, their Basque policy, as people know, where they only pick people from the Basque regions and what have you, the lines of that have come a little bit blurred in the last few years, of course. They've had to acclimatise in that sort of sense. But for them to be doing it in this era, football, such a global game, globalised game and what have you like that, for them still to be loyal to their traditions, to what they are, is incredible. And they're still achieving as well. Not talking about a team who's fighting relegation or struggling here. That academy keeps producing, and there's any number of youngsters in that team as well. Nico is just one of the latest ones. Ayhan Sangset as well. Just a beautiful, big, tall, elegant attacking midfielder as well. And what's interesting is as well, Athletic's academy at one point, and this just goes to show their adaptation, I think, and how they've evolved. They didn't used to produce players like Nico Williams, like Ayhan Sangset. They used to have your big strapping 6-foot midfielders, defenders, big tall strikers, like Fernando Llorente's. That was a classic, what I call a classic Athletic Bilbao product of a player. And now they've got different types of players, different skill sets, and that's what makes them, that's why they're still having success under that rule.
Third time lucky for Valverde, for you, Lars?
Quite possibly. Mallorca are not a terrible team by any means, but Athletic Bilbao would be favourites for this, and it would be lovely because, as David is saying, it's incredible what they're doing. And not just that they've gotten to the cup final, but they're fifth in the league. They're within 2 points of fourth. So there's a very real chance of them sneaking into the Champions League as well. And I think they're such an interesting case study because it's transfers and like signings and all this is such a big part of football, like culture and discourse and everything. So having a club that willingly limits themselves to players from their region. I know you mentioned that's not... I mean, they have someone like Ander Herrera, who was born there but grew up somewhere else, is allowed. Someone who's from somewhere else but moves to Bilbao, well, to the Basque country when they're very young, can be permissible. But that someone at least has a tangible relationship with the Basque culture and country. You do limit the talent pool so dramatically. And it becomes just a completely different way of running a football club. Just everything, every way we think about squad building and working is completely turned upside down. And it just fascinates me that they're able to do this and to be successful. And it makes me think that we should think more about this and look more about what are the potential, like in every crisis, there's an opportunity. Now, not really a crisis, maybe the wrong word, but in every challenge, there's an opportunity. Because one of the upsides is that maybe they develop players, like they can afford to give players second and third chances in the way that they won't have in other clubs. And it's interesting that they are bringing up so many. And I'm fascinated by something like, you know, their top scorer in the league this season is a striker named Gorka Aguruzeta. I apologize for butchering that name. But he's 27, and he was playing for Amorebieta in the Segunda last season. Was at Bilbao a couple of years back, but couldn't really make an impact there. Went down, spent two seasons in the Segunda, and is now back with them. Now, listen, I don't think... he scored 13 goals for Amorebieta in the Segunda. I don't think a lot of other sort of aspirational, ambitious mid-table teams in Spain would pick up a guy who's like 25 who scored 13 goals in the Segunda. Like, that would not be their idea of a new first-team striker. But because they have such a more of a limited talent pool, they have to look twice at people, they have to maybe invest more in people rather than just kind of give them a few games and then chuck them away if it doesn't work. And here they have someone who's their leading goal scorer as they're chasing a Champions League spot, who, again, I don't think other clubs would have necessarily looked twice at. And I think there can be upsides to this. We tend to think of, oh my God, isn't it incredible that they're doing this thing with their hands tied behind their backs? I think we should flip it on its head and look like, is this way of running a club, is there something other clubs could actually learn from them?
Yeah, they lost their biggest one of their biggest stars in the summer, Iñigo Martínez. So he walked away. He went to Barcelona. Athletic can't just go out and go, oh, right, who's the new young flash centre-back in Ligue 1? Who's the new flash young centre-back in whatever league? No, they go, all right, what have we got in our academy? And now they've got a partnership in Dani Vivian and Ayra Paredes. They've got Yeray as well. And that's it. They are sorted then. And that's what's interesting. It's like Lars says, when it comes to January, say they've gone through November, December, and they've maybe only won two games. They can't go, oh, the January window, that'll solve it. That'll figure out everything. We can just spend 30 million and we'll plug that hole. No, it's about investing in people, investing in young talent.
But that sounds like there's a lot of pressure on the coaches. I mean, this makes Valverde's job even more impressive, really, if he's got limited resources, mm-hmm. in a way, compared to other clubs. The fact that they're doing so well, mm-hmm. in La Liga is one thing. The fact that they're up for the Copa del Rey, which they have won, but not for a long time, that's even more impressive when you put everything into consideration. But yet you still believe that they're, despite their challenges, that they're still playing some of the best football in Europe.
Yeah, excellent football. And that's down to Valverde and how he likes to play. It's very, very direct the way they play. I'm not talking about long balls, just direct in terms of shifting the ball out to wide areas, getting Nico Williams on the ball, getting Iñaki Williams on the ball, Munain, Sangset, like I said. They don't mess about with the ball in midfield. They don't get muddled. They win the ball back and they get it out to their attacking threats who they know can come at teams. A number of times this season, Nico Williams picks up the ball, wide left or wide right, cuts in, pull back cross, and there's somebody, often Gurazeta, who's waiting there to pounce. And that's, they know how to play. They're very familiar in that sense, how they play. And that's what's carried them so well this season.
Sounds like they're one-dimensional in their play in that case, in which case other teams, you would have thought, Lars, other teams would look at that and think, well, we know how they're going to play. We know how they're going to set out. Let's just defend against that.
I'm not sure I'd really describe them as one dimensional as such. I think what they do really well is that they're very energetic and aggressive. And I think for me, that makes total sense. Again, if you think of regional stereotyping is a dangerous and a slippery slope to get involved in. We're on thin ice here, but typically throughout the history of sort of football in the Basque countries, again, if you think of players from that area, they're usually dynamic guys. I mean, they're the strong, powerful defenders, yes, but also like players who can run. You don't come across a lot of lazy Basque footballers. Like, it doesn't seem to be a thing quite so often. So, and of course, at San Mamés, at their home ground, like, the atmosphere is very, very intense. So it just makes total sense when you have a history of developing very dynamic players, aggressive players, physical players, players who would not, as the phrase in England goes, worry about playing a rainy Tuesday night in Stoke. It makes total sense to sort of leverage that and put that into your playing style. And under Valverde, you know, they play in a very intense way. It's typical that, you know, one of the most famous, probably the most famous sort of Athletic Bilbao team in the modern era is when Bielsa was there. And that, again, Bielsa, definitely not Basque, but like, there was a perfect sort of a marriage of his philosophy and the sort of willingness to work and the physical capacity of the players that you raise in that region. And Valverde, of course, a very different coach, but also someone who values playing on the front foot, playing with intensity, playing aggressively, and it seems to work.
Okay, it's time to talk about your game of the week. So we haven't talked about Mallorca yet and what they might do in the Copa del Rey. I suppose that's your game of the week, is it, David, or not?
Yeah, I can go with that for my game of the week.
No, it's up to you. Yeah. It's entirely up to you.
No, I'll go for that for my game of the week.
Because if you go for that, I'm going to ask you who's going to win it, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to take Athletic in this one, in the Copa del Rey final. I'm going to take Athletic in the Copa del Rey final. I think they're too strong. I think it's their time. I think Mallorca's also got one eye on what's going on in the league as well. I think that's hard to get away. I mean, I know people say the Cup's a nice distraction, what have you like that, but they've got their status in La Liga to be thinking about. So I think the way it's going to go on, it will be Real Mallorca's first Copa in 21 years. But I think the way it's going to continue. I think Athletic finally do it.
And that's, it was Saturday evening?
Yes.
Saturday evening. So Copa del Rey in the Spanish leagues. But what about you, Lars? Where would you go for? Oh, by the way, I didn't ask David for some food to go with that Copa del Rey. We need something to munch on.
Yeah, I was going to say we need some food that's, you know, either Basque or from them Mallorquin.
If you want.
I'm
a plate of chips if you want.
No, I tell you what, I think we'll go for a nice little Basque pincho, where I always really like, get a nice baguette. And some anchovies and some oil on top as well. Just a little bit
simple.
Yeah, nice and simple, but yeah, exactly. Good for you as well.
I'm not sure anchovies are seafood, but if you like.
Nice to snack on while you're watching the game. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, we're doing not too many anchovies, please. Not too many.
You need the seafood and a dry white wine.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he forgot the wine, but thank you.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, there's a lovely Basque drink, and funnily enough, I was talking to producer Charlie about this, called Chacoli. Very dry white wine, really, really good stuff. So if you can get a hold of a bottle of that while you're watching the game, well, even better.
Perfect. And what about you, Lars? What's your game of the week?
No, I'm heading back to Italy. It's Roma Lazio, the Rome derby for me. Always an occasion, always feisty. Both teams have recently changed managers. Lazio very recently, but of course Roma have had a real upturn since they sort of managed to break free of the cult of Mourinho. I think break free, is that what they say about the Scientologists? It's like they've kind of managed to get out of that.
I want to break free. Is that one? Yeah.
I was thinking more of that. Wasn't that the documentary about the people who managed to get out of Scientology? Well, maybe that's an unfair comparison, but maybe it isn't. Anyway, with Daniele De Rossi now in charge of Roma, they look like a much happier ship. They're playing some football again. Exciting times all around. They now take on Lazio, who, with Igor Tudor in charge, after moving Maurizio Sarri on, they beat Juventus with that last-minute winner at the weekend, and then they had a defeat to them in the cup. I'm waffling a little bit. It's going to be a fiery game. It always is. I'm sure we'll have fireworks and red cards and stuff going all around. And, of course, having picked a game from Italy means you have a lot of good options for your food pairing. I'm feeling particularly keen on some saltimbocca this weekend. That would be very nice.
What is that?
Oh, it's a kind of a veal that's wrapped in prosciutto and marinated and cooked in wine. It's very nice.
Wow.
And nothing for us vegans. I'm only kidding. I was only kidding. Me a vegan. Come on now.
I'm taking my yellow card here. I'm committing a professional foul and showing complete disrespect for the vegans and saying no. We're having salt in boca. We're having salt in boca with the Rome Derby. If you want something else, you can go somewhere else and watch it on your own.
Thank you for listening to On the Continent, and do make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
I thought you said you were the talent.
I am the talent, but thank you for that. There'll be no
more in the writing than in the performing in this case.
that's your motivation. Come on, show us you're the talent.
Say enough of this already.
Show us why you get the big books.
Okay,
come on.
I'll show you. Pay attention.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.